Good afternoon and welcome to Flavour on Cambridge 105 with our Christmas food-loving team of Ruth Reyes, Alan Order and myself, Matt Bentman. And thanks once again to Ronnie Barber for the last 2 hours.
The Christmas food features we began a couple of episodes ago will be taking over almost the entirety of today's programme, so it's worth having a pencil and paper handy to note down some of the suggestions we'll be hearing, such as those from Mariana Torres of Books for Cooks, who will be selecting the best of recently published cookbooks.
Or note down how to make Aoife Maxwell's new cocktails, or which drinks Tom Lewis is recommending for your Christmas meal.
And as well as those, I'll be visiting the Gogmagog Hills Farm Shop to have a gander, a hamper, a turkey and a mince pie.
Andrew Webb has selected a Christmassy book to tell us about from his historical bookshelf.
Ruth travels to the Free Press in Prospect Row to find out how the pub has become a venue of choice for the foodie and about the possibility of a Michelin-starred chef doing a pop-up there next year.
And we'll be hearing from some Cambridge foodies about what they will be eating at Christmas. And as usual, we'll finish off the programme with a roundup of Cambridge's food and drink news.
The specialist bookshop, Books for Cooks, is in Blenheim Crescent in Notting Hill. If you're going to London, it's an essential place to visit with its several thousand different books. Its staff are knowledgeable and super helpful. They test many of the recipes in their test kitchen as well. Alan went to speak with Mariana Torres to get her book recommendations, beginning with one published by Delicious Magazine.
Right, so this is the Delicious Magazine's
yes.
Love to Cook.
Mm-hmm. The Moroccan fish stew from here. Obviously, a variety of fish, and then it's got flaked almonds, which I thought it was really good. I think that would go really well with the couscous and the fish.
And some traditional Moroccan spices as well.
Yeah, Moroccan spices, Middle Eastern spices.
Yeah, and ginger with the fish. Yeah, I think that looks...
Yes, definitely. I think, especially the almonds, I think for me it's just very, quite different from anything I've seen before, so that's why I picked that one. And then this one, Massaman roast chicken. We've actually cooked this here last week in the test kitchen, and it was a really big hit. Everybody loved this, so definitely pick this one. So it's basically some Malaysian curry. The chefs were telling me that you can use any kind of like good quality curry paste and it'll still work. So if you can't find the actual Massaman curry paste, you can just use like a red Thai curry paste. It'll still work really well.
It's got quite a few ingredients as well, hasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Kaffir lime leaves, lemongrass, but also coconut milk, tamarind puree. So it strikes me as it must be really quite tasty, actually.
It went really fast. We sold out really quickly. Definitely very good. Ordolenghi? Plenty more.
Is it selling well?
Very well, very well.
And what do you think of it?
Obviously, Ordolenghi's got, I think, 4 books in total now. This one is personally is my favourite. Definitely comparing this one to the first Plenty, so they're both vegetarian. This one I just find, I do recommend this a lot to people because I think it's much more accessible, much more achievable for like everyday cooking, I find.
So not as complex.
Exactly. It's still, I mean, obviously you need the different spices and the ingredients. It's not like as simple as maybe Jamie Oliver, for example. Yeah, you need some more ingredients than the average.
For a lot of people, that is part of the fun, actually, isn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly. So that's why you get the amazing flavours. That's why it's so good. Okay,
so what's in it?
Flick through this one. First thing straight away that pops out for me is that I've actually tested this steamed aubergine with sesame and spring onion, and it's amazing. I never had better aubergine ever. This is the best aubergine recipe I've ever had, and it's basically very, very simple. You peel the aubergine, you steam it, then you just make a sesame and a spring onion with ginger and soy sauce dressing, and you just layer it all top of the aubergine, and it's really nice. So it's not actually being cooked in any oil. It's not cooked in anything. Let's flick through this. What else?
Fantastic photographs.
It's amazing. It's very nice.
There's a lot of recipes in this book, aren't there?
Yes,
it's not padded
definitely.
Out.
It's, I think it's really worth the money. Squash with chili yogurt and coriander
and now
sauce.
Now I've made this myself.
Really?
It's really, really tasty. Yeah.
I mean, pretty much everything. We can flick through the whole book and everything.
These desserts. Well, baked rhubarb, but, you know, I've got to think about rhubarb. But roasted figs with pomegranate molasses and orange zest.
Yeah,
just
that's just...
Absolutely. Okay, so that's Yotam Ottolenghi, Plenty More.
Mm-hmm.
Hemsley and Hemsley, The Art of Eating well.
So everybody's raving about this now. It's very, very popular. But it is beautiful. I think the way it's been designed, it's amazing. It's very colourful. So I've picked this one here, chicken adobo with broccoli rice. This we've also cooked here in the test kitchen, and it was amazing.
It went down well?
Yes, definitely. So they've got a lot of, like, really nice snacks in this book, which I really like. I think it's a very... Most books don't have a lot of snacks, and I think it's really important if you're trying to pursue, like, a healthy lifestyle, you're going to try to eat healthy snacks. Chickpea crunchies. And it's just basically in the oven... chickpeas mixed with different spices, and you can just snack on that all day. It would be so good for you, and it's a very healthy snack. So I think that's really important. But I also picked an indulgent dessert from this book. Pear and five spice crumble with ginger creme fraiche. I think that sounds...
So the book's got a good variety of things. Mm. It's got main courses, it's got desserts, yeah. It's got snacks.
It's got, I think it's got drinks as well. At the end, a lot of smoothies, a lot of juices, a lot of...
Okay, so that again was Hemsley and Hemsley.
The Art of Eating Well.
Let's go to the other extreme, shall we?
The Indulgent Cakes by Australian Women's Weekly.
I must say the cover does look pretty indulgent.
You
have this multi-layered cake with cream and raspberries and chocolate.
Yes, I think the whole book is...
chocolate dripping down the sides.
It would be such a nice gift. If someone likes cake, then for Christmas this would be amazing. So I picked here banoffee meringue with honeycomb. So this book I think is amazing because it always shows you the finished product and then served up into little dishes, and it's very generous with the pictures, and I like that. And then this one, I cannot believe, I think is heaven. Berry and tamarillo croissant pudding cake. It's like a giant croissant with berries, and you can serve it up with cream.
It looks
and
wonderful.
It just looks, I think, like heaven.
Yeah.
And the whole book, it's got amazing combinations of different fruits.
So basically it's cakes and puddings, is
it? It's basically, yeah, just cakes.
And who would ever want anything else, really?
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. I mean, I had trouble picking recipes out of this one.
Yeah.
I think everything looks amazing.
So that was, in fact, called Indulgent Cakes, and it's from Australian Women's Weekly.
Mm. Okay, now the Christmas book that I've picked, Do Ahead Christmas. This, I think it's what everybody needs, because
yeah,
it's Do Ahead, prepare everything up to 1 week in advance.
Right, and this is James Ramsden.
Yes, and yes, I had a bit of trouble picking things from this one as well, because everything looks amazing. So I've got polenta chips with blue cheese sauce, I mean, chili nuts.
And you can make that...
Up to three days ahead.
Okay, so in here there are things that you can make in advance, and it tells you how much in advance you can make them. That's pretty helpful.
Yeah, definitely.
It's nice to know you can make things a week ahead, isn't it?
The chili nuts 1 week ahead as well.
Yeah. So what sort of things are in it then? There's party food, obviously.
Yeah, definitely. Apples. This is called apple snow with fennel biscuits. I thought the fennel biscuits idea sounds really good. So basically it's cooking apples mixed with sugar, and then that's swirled into cream, and then you've got the fennel biscuits on the side, and you can make it up to 1 week ahead and then just prepare it the day before and it's ready.
So parts of it you can do a week ahead, and then there's something that you need to do
to
1 day
together,
ahead.
Yeah, I think you can just prepare everything and then put it together. And main dishes, the classic turkey, of course, told you how to make whole day ahead. At the end of the book, it actually has a leftovers section, which is really good.
Goose fat fried Christmas cake with Stilton.
I wouldn't think of that.
No, I mean, you just say you would want to take off the marzipan and icing before you you do this, but that's a nice idea.
Mm.
So let's just say it again. That was Do Ahead Christmas, James Ramsden.
Okay, this one is The Green Kitchen Travels.
And that's by David Frankiel and Louise Vindal.
Yes, so this is a new vegetarian book, and people have been coming in very excited about this one as well. Mm. They've got a blog and they've...
Oh, have they?
They're doing really well.
It's a big book, isn't it?
It's really, really beautiful hardback.
A thick book.
Yes.
Yeah, and a very, very attractive cover.
So basically they went around the world looking for authentic vegetarian recipes, which I don't think has been done before.
Mm.
This is just a very simple breakfast idea that I had to talk about. It's basically soaked oats, and then you just cover it with raspberries or berries or anything, and you wake up in the morning, it's ready. I just thought that was really clever. And this sweet potato gnocchi with kale pesto. We've had this in here as well. We've tested it, and it was amazing as well. This is probably one of the best dishes I've ever had. Very filling and very healthy.
Right. The book has desserts in it, or is it just main
courses? It has some desserts.
Oh, so it does.
Double chocolate rye muffins as well. Roasted strawberry and pine nut froyo.
And that's... this is Italian, is it?
Yeah.
So that was Green Kitchen Travels by David Frankiel and Louise Vindal. Mm-hmm. Brilliant. This is one that you said is selling very well at the moment.
Yes, definitely.
Party Perfect Bites by Millie Taylor. Delicious recipes for canapes, finger food and party snacks.
Yes.
Well, it's a very topical subject, isn't it?
Yes, it's selling really well now. I think everybody's preparing for their Christmas parties. And what I love about this one, actually, is it's divided by, let's say, region or culture. So it's got Mediterranean, Scandinavian, Indian, Asian, North African, Middle Eastern and Americas. So it's divided into culture, which is really nice. So you can actually have like a themed party, depending on what food you're having, which is quite good.
Yeah.
So let's see, Scandinavian.
Right, smoked mackerel, apple and fennel on rye. Yeah, that sounds Scandinavian
a lot of rye.
To me.
Yeah. What else?
Grape. Again, it's great pictures, isn't it?
Yes, definitely.
Beetroot, salmon, bellinis.
It's really nicely presented, this book. No, I really like it because it's got basically two pages with five or four selections of the recipes, so the different platters or a selection of the
photographs.
Then on the next page, on the page before, it actually tells you how to make it, so you can actually see if you made it all together how it would look like.
Oh, I see what
how
you
we
mean.
Would combine together.
Yeah.
So I really like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's very straightforward. I think you just need to get ingredients and the explanations for the recipes are actually quite short, which is really important if you're doing canapes.
Yeah.
You want to keep it short, straightforward.
You want them simple.
Get on with it.
Yeah. Tequila scallops.
Yeah.
Jerk chicken and plantain skewers. That would be good.
Yeah.
Lovely. That's an attractive book.
Yes. Definitely.
Okay. What was it called again? Party Perfect Bites by Millie Taylor, and that's selling well, you say?
Definitely. It's probably the bestseller at the moment.
Oh, is it? Mm. Right. Great. Okay, thanks, Mariana.
Yes, thanks to Mariana Torres for that. And let's move on now from getting ideas about cooking food to actually going and eating some. The Free Press in Prospect Row has had a reputation for a long time as somewhere that cares a lot about the quality of its food. Steaks from the cattle on Cambridge's meadows, for example. Well, now it's breaking new ground by having pop-ups almost every night. And Ruth went along to talk with the owner, Craig.
Yeah, the idea is, so we've got lunchtimes, we have the Free Press kitchen. That's somebody else. So I've leased the kitchen out at lunchtimes to Megan, who runs that. Makes all her own homemade pies and stuff. So everything's homemade. And then we have Bangers and Mash Company, where you're different sausages, different mash, different gravy. Sort of mix and match your own. Tuesday night, reggae kitchen with Garfield, who works at the pint shop. So he comes and does his own little traditional stuff. You know, he's quite passionate about it, which is amazing. Then we have Wednesday. Who do we have Wednesday? We have Inda's Kitchen. Lovely Inda. She's very popular. She does a Thali platters, so a traditional Thali dishes with different mains, different starters, rice, poppadoms, chutney. We have a lot of people come in. It's the only place they come for a curry. Thursday is Go-Go Gogi Gooey, and they're really popular. All the lovely burgers, fresh salads, kimchi fries, which seems to be a revelation, which has forced me to make my own Bloody Mary, kimchi Bloody Mary, blend down the kimchi, sieve it all out, and use that, mix it through with a bit of tomato juice.
Cool, do you serve that here, or is that just...
We serve that here, so we've got all that going on. Friday is Gorilla Kitchen, and then Saturday night we go back to Free Press Kitchen, and Sunday nights we've got a new one starting next week called The Warmer's Toast. It's just toasties and some soup and what have you. So,
lovely.
Yeah, so try and keep it all a bit fresh. It's nice, you know, you can come every night and have something different to eat. But it's something that I had to do because I had to get out of the kitchen. So that was I embarked on a full-time degree at university. So I had to relinquish the kitchen, and this was the best way I thought that it would work, and a bit fresh and give a traditional pub like this a bit of a boost and do something different. So it's kind of nice. Working so far, touch wood. It is a bit of fun. So I think it will be a lot more popular in the coming years because business rates, obviously, in Cambridge and rents is very high. So you find a lot of people are finding ways around that, and the pop-ups is one of them. where they can, you know, get a van, or they can pop up somewhere where perhaps the landlords are a bit time consumed with cooking, because it does take a lot of your time, you know, menus and making sure the kitchen's all sorted and staffing and what have you. So it's a more viable option for a lot of people with less time. So I think you'll find a lot more pop-ups will just be around pubs around the city, and already it starts. And I think the Alexander Arms are doing a pop-up. You know, he's a top chef, but he's still getting people in to cook for him. And there are other pubs, you know, there's Carpenter's Arms. Carpenter's Arms are using Jalan. I tried at the ice rink food park the other day, and they were tasty.
Were they tasty? Yeah.
So we're going to do something with Beatrice at Jalan next year as well.
Are you thinking of any other kind of pop-ups coming, or?
Yeah, I've got I've lots of emails. I think Rabina Kitchen are interested, who are, they make their homemade pastas and what have you. They're Hertfordshire-based, about this way. They'd like to come up and do one. There's another couple, Italian couple, who've asked me they can come in. There's Buffalo Joe's, a pop-up. He's in the new year, he's going to come in. I have Carrico Tapas. Coming back to the new year, we hope to get Estefania back in and get a lovely, fresh, traditional Spanish tapas going again. We're still talking about it. A Michelin star chef wants to come and do a pop-up to try his... He wants to open a new restaurant, a new pub somewhere. So we've got a restaurant, wants to open a pub, and he'd like to try out his ideas here. So the new year is going to be quite interesting, trying to juggle everybody. That's why keeping it fresh with all the different pop-ups and keeping people's imagination going through food hopefully will bring people in into the new year. But we'll see.
Cool. So you said it was going well, all the different...
Yeah, it's going really, really well. Yeah, and we're going to do... there's a couple of the pop-ups I'm talking to. We're going to do a charity event in the new year for Red Balloon, local charity, children being bullied. So we're going to do something for that in the new year. Yeah, so we've got lots of things, beer festivals, events out the front with different pop-ups outside when the weather gets a little bit warmer. Yeah, our serving times, lunch times with Free Press Kitchen, 12 till 2, Saturday and Sunday, 12 till 5. So Sunday roast, which is amazing, Sunday roast, nice sirloin of beef every Sunday till 5 o'clock. And then the evenings we kick off from 6, and the guys are sort of quite flexible. So if it's still busy at 9, they'll still serve at 9:30 and go on. So there's no, we're not too stringent on the times.
Nice one. Great, thank you very much, Craig.
You're welcome. And you can find us at Free Press Pub, Twitter, Facebook.
Well, thanks to Craig Bickley from the Free Press, who has real imagination and vision, I think.
I think so too. I can't wait to see what happens in the new year.
Yeah. Anyway, what do local foodies like to eat at Christmas? Here's John West from the Art of Meat in Arbury Court.
Like most butchers, I have what's left over. So we most probably have the most eclectic Christmas lunch there is.
Okay, but what would you like to be left over most?
I'm quite traditional. The turkeys are fantastic, and it's the only time of year we sell them, so I'll be happy if there is a turkey.
Thank you, John. And we've heard about making food, eating food, but how about some historical food now? Here's food journalist Andrew Webb.
This time on the Historical Bookshelf, we're thinking about Christmas. And the book I've chosen is A Calendar of Feasts, Capcurn Cakes and Lace by Julia Jones and Barbara Deer. It's an interesting book because my previous selections have all been quite old books from the 60s or the 50s or something like that. This book's actually from 1987, which makes it fairly modern for the Historical Bookshelf. On the back here it says... An enchanting 12-month calendar of traditional festivals and feast days and the foods, folklore and handicrafts associated with them. I mean, this is kind of interesting because it says here there's a bit about the authors. And Julia Jones has been making lace and crafts for many years, and as well as giving courses on English cookery. There's a sort of folky movement that you don't imagine appearing in the 80s at all. We sort of imagine it in the 60s, and we looked at that in previous historical bookshelves in the 50s. And we sort of see it coming back now with the sort of rise in artisanal everything from brewing to cheeses to that sort of stuff. But you imagine in the 80s it was completely destroyed. But it seems, no, there were people who were interested in in these sort of high days and holidays and the food that went with them. There's a pull quote on the back here. "This calendar of British feasts and festivals is a beautiful, readable and practical tribute to the richness of our culinary tradition. Buy one for bedtime and one for the kitchen." And that's by none other than the great lady herself, Delia Smith. The book's interesting because it takes food and recipes and weaves them around the year, tied to various festivals and saints' days and folk traditions. And we've sort of forgotten that this is how the year was measured in olden times, from everything from the assizes to the terms of the colleges. So if we say Michaelmas term or Michaelmas night or Midsummer's Day or Martinmas, there was a time when these festivals and days punctuated the year. Design-wise, it's very 80s, but not in a kind of neon-y, modern-y, futuristic way. It's part of that sort of Laura Ashley revival that ran concurrent with, you know, New Romantics. And it's very, very delicate, lots of flowers and pastel hues. And my copy, actually, is an old library book from Cumbria County Library. And it's quite beautiful, really, because it's still got a ticket in the front here, the old-fashioned ticket, and then it's been superseded by this barcode, and it's a discontinued book. So we've got here December, so we've got here Advent Sunday and various sorts of things. And in November, just before that, we had things like Stir-Up Sunday, which is when you would make your Christmas pudding. But the day that I've picked out, and I think that's worthy of a quick look here, is December the 21st, which you may or may not know is St. Thomas's Day. So this is St. Thomas's Day, or Thomas Mass, and it falls on the 21st, or very near the true solstice. So as well as recipes, which feature in the book quite a lot, you know, we've got here the Yule log, crystallised peel, roast turkey, and all that sort of stuff. There's actually quite a lot of old history in here, not only to do with the religious markings of the year, but older ones that go beyond that. And that it's these sort of little facts that I think really give the book depth. On St. Thomas's Eve, no work was done. Young unmarried girls, many areas, used to place a sprig of evergreen under their pillows and went to bed at night. There seems to be a lot of these festivals seem to be about meeting partners and men or women and unmarried maidens and wedding rings in cakes and all this sort of stuff. It's a charmingly written book in that regard because there is a lot of research and history here, and it gives gravitas to the recipes and the rest of the book. So there's a recipe here for a Yule log, and we're all familiar with Yule log, and we just buy them in the shops now, and the recipe involves Swiss roll tins and all that sort of stuff. But she's actually taken the time to give a bit of context to the Yule log, which, you know, a modern recipe book might not necessarily do. The tradition of burning a Yule log on Christmas Eve is an ancient one. A large forest log, found or given, but not bought, will be brought in with great ceremony into the manor house on this evening. Songs were sung in its honour and guests had to pay tribute before passing on. It was thought that as the log burned, it would burn away all the bad luck and old wrong. A small piece of one year's log would be kept to light the next year's log. As the tradition of burning the Yule log has died, we can keep the custom alive by baking a chocolate log. simpler times. So it's things like that that I think are really, really useful, because a lot of modern recipe books, even when they've got Christmas recipes in, there is no context. And this time of year particularly is one where we can connect with really old folk traditions, religious festivals, and these punctuate the year. I think we've lost a little bit of that. The rest of the book, just a charming little aside as well. So we've got here St. Catherine's Eve, Stir-Up Sunday, of course. We've got that Mash of Nine Sorts. I like this one, in October. In some rural areas, it was usual at Halloween supper to serve Mash of Nine Sorts to unmarried guests, in which the lady of the house would have hidden her wedding ring. We've got St. Audrey's Day, October the 17th. Punky Night, which is the last Thursday in October. Slow gins in there, hot-baked wardens. Suffolk Fawzes, St. Bartholomew's Day in the middle of August. That was a great day for festivals. The Bartholomew Fairs, they were noted in Smithfield, London, was an absolute, kind of the Glastonbury of its day. It's fabulous that Julia and Barbara have structured a book around these. I see a lot of seasonal books, but they are done by month, and that's about it, really. It's a really interesting way to structure a book of recipes, and I think it's definitely one for your bookshelves too. That's A Calendar of Feasts, Catkern Cakes and Lace by Julia Jones and Barbara Deer, published by Doreen Kinsley. That's all from the Historical Bookshelf for 2014. We'll see you next year with a new selection of great historical books about food. In the meantime, Merry Christmas.
Well, thank you, Andrew. I never knew about Yule logs before, and it's interesting how much we do that comes from old rituals. But some people are having a break from food rituals. Here's food writer and chef Rosie Sykes.
For the last 2 years, I've spent my Christmas in France with my husband, and we have decided to... We've given it all up. And on Christmas Day, we had a vacherin baked in the oven. It's a cheese which is made from the same cows as those that make Conte, so from the Jura, from the Savoie, up near Switzerland. And it comes in a little wooden box, and you just put a little bit of white wine and some thyme in there and bake it in the oven. And then you just have boiled potatoes and cornichons and salad. So very unconventional Christmas dinner, but wonderful.
I must give it a go.
Have you ever given it a go, Ruth?
I have not, but I'm definitely going to have to.
Well, that's enough about food. What can we have to drink? It's paper and pencil time.
This year, I've decided to take a look at making a slightly more complicated sugar syrup as a base. So I know we've talked a lot about simple syrups in the cocktail, so using one-to-one sugar and water, sometimes infusing them with herbs, spices, but very simple normally. The syrup that I've made for today is a little bit more complicated, but not too complicated. And it also serves as the basis for three cocktails, so I think it's worth the effort. So they're all interrelated and can be used in different ways. So let's start with the syrup. Essentially, I was thinking of Christmas flavours, you know, what can we do? And I have a bit of obsession with pomegranates at the moment, which I really like. So I decided to combine pomegranate juice and orange and try and make a syrup with those. I just got some just pomegranate juice from the health food shop. You know, absolutely nothing added, just pomegranate juice, and that served nicely. So what I did was I took 500 mils of that pomegranate juice, and the juice of about, I think it was about four oranges in the end, but it was about another 500 mils, half a litre. And I added just over 500 grams of sugar. So I actually had a litre of liquid to 500 grams of sugar, but I actually then reduced that a good bit down on the hob. And it took a couple of hours, and I reduced it down by about half. And I also added the finely grated orange zest from one orange in there too, just to give a bit of extra orange flavour. And so I reduced that down, and I ended up with this nice thick, and it has that slightly bitter smell, but it is very sweet. So it's sweet, but it's bitter. You can get the orange. It's quite interesting, I think. This is a great thing to make up in a big batch, you know. It's kind of your Christmas base syrup. So I wanted to make a couple of cocktails with it to make it worth all that effort. I don't normally, you know, go to so much effort for cocktails. So I decided to do, first of all, my signature sour, the usual formula, really. 4 parts alcohol, 2 parts sour, 1 part sweet. And for the alcohol, I've done something. I have infused a spirit, but really simply. So I've literally taken a bottle of quite cheap gin, I can tell you. And I've really just thrown in there a vanilla pod, a cinnamon stick, a bit of star anise and a cardamom. Just, you know, to add a bit of extra Christmas jazziness to a cheap bottle of gin. But if you don't like the extra spice that this brings, and you'll see when you taste the cocktail at the end, it does come out quite spicy. If you don't like that, you could just use plain gin or plain vodka if you don't want those extra spices. Right, okay. So, you know, it's quite versatile. So I'm just going to make one, but obviously you can make this in bigger proportions and save it. So I'm going to start with 40. I'm actually going to use 60 mils of gin. Oops. We're going to use 30 mils of fresh lime juice in this case. I think the lime is nice to perk things up. So 40 mils of freshly squeezed lime juice. And then 15 mils of our sugar syrup.
15?
Yes.
Yep.
So we have all our ingredients in the cocktail shaker. I'm just going to do the usual, add some ice.
Right.
Okay, so we've given it a good stir. Now we're just going to strain it into our cocktail glass.
All right.
And I've just got a little piece of lime zest to garnish with, because we've got lime in the cocktail, and the green goes quite nicely with the pinkiness of the cocktail. The Christmassy spices really come through, don't they?
Yeah, that's good.
Okay, so that's our nice sour. And these always look nice in these nice, you know, fancy cocktail glasses.
Yes.
It looks really good. But I do think these are actually easier than you think to make for a large number of people, because you can make a big jug and then just pour it out, shake it over ice as needed. So that's easy. So the next one is even easier for a large number of people. So all we're going to do is use the syrup. I've got a champagne flute here, and I'm going to use just 20 millilitres of the syrup directly into the champagne flute. Then I'm going to take some of my fresh pomegranate seeds. Oops. cut them in two.
So that was a large 2 teaspoons, which
is about that.
Well,
two heaped teaspoons.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to top it up with some, this is cava, but you could use anything you want, Prosecco, champagne, whatever you want to use.
And that's a lovely colour, isn't it?
It's really nice. It comes out a really rich red colour.
Yeah.
Because actually the syrup by itself looks really black, like a very dark red wine almost, doesn't it? So I'm just giving it a little stir just to spread the syrup through the cava. I would garnish this with a little orange twist as well, just to add a little bit of a different colour against all the red, because the pomegranates look nice in there, little jewels.
Thank you.
Really nice, very drinkable.
Yeah,
and, you know, it's not too alcoholic, because it's not like you're adding a liqueur to the cava, so...
Right, know, yeah, it's quite quaffable, really,
yes.
Isn't it? Yeah. Yeah, that's nice.
And you can have lots of it. So the last version I'm going to make is actually a non-alcoholic version.
Okay.
And, you know, they're
so for children and those who are driving.
Yes, exactly. And those poor people are in that position. This is really tasty and refreshing. I was drinking this earlier and I really liked it. So I'm really quite pleased with this one. Okay, so all I'm going to do is start with, I've got a great, you know, quite a big wide tumbler glass here. It's actually a very big glass. I'm going to fill it pretty much with ice, probably about 3/4.
Okay.
Now, in this instance, I'm going to use 40 mils of my sugar syrup. But, you know, you could change that depending on how sweet you like things. So I've just poured that straight in on top of the ice.
Yeah.
And what I've then got is half a fresh lime.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to juice that directly into the... that smells lovely. So into there, then, I'm just going to add some fresh pomegranate seeds and some orange slices. And the last step is just to top up with some sparkling water. You can see then the slices of orange and the pomegranate seeds coming all the way through. And I have some rather Christmassy red and green straws. And this would be a good one to make in a jug and then just pour out over ice.
Yeah. Oh, I think that's lovely. I think people would really go for that.
Yeah,
actually.
It's really
And I think good. If they have to be denied alcohol, they won't feel too bad about it.
Absolutely. So I do have some other Christmas cocktail recipes from the last couple of years, and they're also on my latest blog post that's on the blog with the details of these.
That's sweetpeasandsours.com.
Sweetpeasandsours.com.
Right. Okay.
Many thanks to Aoife Maxwell. That's a nice idea to include a non-alcoholic cocktail too.
Yeah, it is. So just a reminder, all of those cocktails plus more and some really nice, enticing photographs are on sweetpeasandsours.com.
Well, Christmas dinner in the Webb household has a few traditions. One is the demolishing of Chocolate Street. Two is there being plenty of Stilton. And then three, I think there's normally an argument about the telly. But as for what we're sitting down to on Christmas dinner, we tend to vary it. I've tried pretty much everything. I kind of ring the changes. So I've done turkey, which is great. I've done lamb, bizarrely, venison, stuffed goose, all those sorts of things. Last year we did chicken, actually, and that was kind of an interesting one because a lot of producers are now taking on chickens to like 100 days old, and they are getting much bigger, much more flavourful, but without any of the kind of, not as big as a turkey, so it's still sensible. You end up with tons and tons of leftover stuff. But the main thing, really, is just sort of having a nice time and plenty of red wine, I think.
Well, my favourite part of Christmas, food-related, is actually on Christmas Eve, when we come back from midnight service. So technically it's Christmas Day at that stage, and we have a tradition of having some nice champagne or cava, whatever's going, with some lovely brown bread, so normally Irish soda bread, and smoked salmon. And for the last number of years, I've ordered the salmon from a lovely smokery down in West Cork in the southwest of Ireland called Woodcock Smokery, and it's wild Atlantic salmon. It's absolutely beautiful. It's really worth it. So there's nothing like coming back, you know, late at night, brown bread, smoked salmon, glass of something sparkling.
That was Andrew Webb and Aoife Maxwell talking about their Christmas food. What are you guys having for Christmas?
Well, I'm popping over to Spain, so I'm going to be eating lots of fresh seafood, langoustines and so on, I imagine. I'm staying with the family, so I've never experienced anything like it, actually. I've never been to Spain.
Yeah, it's going to be good.
Well, we're having a fish stew on Christmas Eve and turkey on Christmas Day.
Delicious.
And what about you?
A fish stew as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah, on Christmas Eve. Possibly lamb or goat, depending on how my mum feels.
Oh. Well, the other week, Matt journeyed to the hills south of Cambridge to get a flavour of life at a farm shop.
The Gogmagog Hills Farm Shop is a couple of miles south of Cambridge on the A1307.
It began over 30 years ago by Colin and his wife Leslie. Today their sons run the business. It's very different now to how it was then, but then so was the rest of the world.
I'm Colin Bradford, and I've only ever worked for my father and for myself.
You're from Shelford, is that correct?
I was born here. Actually born in the house here, yes. My father was from Linton and my mother from Babraham. So we've always been a very local family. One little story I'll just tell you about my parents. Apparently, my mother and father got married in Cambridge. I don't know why they didn't get married in Babraham. But on the way back to Babraham, to the little reception they were going to have, father stopped off here at the farm and milked the cows. My son Marcus, who got married recently, I think if he'd have done that, his new wife would ever have spoken to him.
There is quite a famous bit on the website which talks about the fact that you wanted to sell potatoes, but a huge crop of mushrooms.
Oh, that's right.
Oh, yeah. That was the year after we were married, really,
yeah,
wasn't it?
Yes, we went to harvest these potatoes.
And we walked up.
And it was just...
You couldn't walk on the field without selling mushrooms.
No.
So we picked them all, didn't we? And put a sign at the gate, we gave them away, and then in the end... Do you remember I bought some chickens?
That's right.
That's when we started to sell eggs.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's where it really started.
Yeah, I suppose so, yeah.
Yeah. But things, if you don't write all these things down, it's very easy to forget.
We carried on the farming up until now, obviously.
Yeah, we kept it as it was, really, for a while. And then in the late 70s, didn't we, sort of, we started to really sell things. Start a bit of a farm shop then, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. We had always been selling a few things like potatoes and eggs, but we wanted to expand to sell some of the products that were growing here, particularly meat, because we kept quite a lot of beef cattle at the time. And in those days, just sold frozen. But gradually, we found there was a demand for fresh meat, expanded that quite a bit, and then...
Didn't we sell some of our own beef in the shop too, didn't
we? Oh, yes,
we?
Yes.
We did that because we used to sell them to Saffron Walden Market when there was a cattle market there,
didn't
we?
Yeah.
The live cattle. Yeah. We used to take about two every Tuesday, didn't we? And it was quite good. But then times got a bit hard, didn't it? Did we go for decimal then?
The new decimal money will be with us on Decimal Day, the 15th of February, 1971.
It was hard times for some of the smaller farms. I think we lost quite a bit of money over the cattle and the feed and everything at the time.
Since October 1973, the world has witnessed an energy revolution. As reserves are depleted, the barrel price has gone sky high.
Times may have been hard, but some good things happened.
We had two sons, Charles and Marcus. Charles, when he finished university, he went and worked in the city.
Mm-hmm.
And Marcus...
Went to university.
Yeah, he read geology at Edinburgh. And I never dreamt in my wildest dreams they'd ever come into the business.
Mm.
We found ourselves in about 2004, suddenly with both of them home within 5 days
yes.
of each other.
Yeah. In the summer, wasn't it? July.
Yeah. And July, Charles wanted to start a business, and I think Marcus was persuaded to come join Charles.
Well, they thought they'd start a business together eventually, and then they thought, well, look, there's a business here, let's help Mum and Dad retire.
Yeah.
And that was 10 years ago. My feet haven't touched the ground since,
yeah,
I don't think.
Working harder now than we ever did.
I know. We don't have to, but we feel, because we live on site, you can't ignore it. We try not to interfere too much, but we're... I would like to say that we're still a good part of it, aren't we?
I think so.
We're needed.
So, yes.
Well, sort of are.
Yeah. And it's quite nice we're working with all the younger people as well.
Oh, they're great. Yeah. We love that. That's amazing.
My name is Tara Davies. I'm from the Golden Gold Butchers. I was in for Young Butcher of the Year this year.
Why did you become a butcher?
It was fun. I was at a friend's house once and I was helping her dad cut up a bit of venison and it was so bad. I didn't even know what I was doing, but I just knew I enjoyed it. Now I can do it properly.
Do you think it's great fun?
It is good, yeah. I think there is a lot more room for young people to come into this area of work. We also have Jack, who works behind the counter. He was in the final as well for Young Butcher of the Year. He was in the top three last year. We're very proud of him as well.
What I really like to see is how well some of the youngsters who've come here from and have done apprenticeships and gone on to do very well and win various competitions. And amazing how knowledgeable some of the youngsters are about not only their meat but their cheeses. And that's the bit I really find satisfying.
So we're in the deli today. I'm Ellie and this is Ed. Ed is great with the cheese, he knows quite a lot. He's been down to Neil's yard and had some training 2 weeks ago. So he's going to talk to you about cheese.
Okay, lots of our cheeses are quite unique. For example, our house blue as such is the Stilton. which is made with unpasteurised milk, opposed to the traditional pasteurised milk of the Stilton. And that's really popular because it's quite salty and it's perfect for the end of a meal. We've also got this really special wax-wrapped black cow cheddar, and the company make milk and vodka at the same time. You've got lots of really nice clean flavours in there. And when they make the milk and the vodka, they separate the curds and the whey. They make the whey into a beer and then distill that beer into a vodka, which we sell. And then they also turn the curds into this lovely, quite dry tasting, sharp cheddar. And also in the deli, we don't just have cheeses and hams. We've got lots of really nice foods that are perfect for Christmas time, but also perfect for all time of the year.
Well, we've got some great Christmas hampers. We have bespoke hampers, ready-made ones, or the random selection. You can buy those straight off the shelf as well. But we've got lots of special things in, like this fruitcake for cheese, so it's perfect in a hamper for a cheese. It's a lovely sort of fruity alternative to a cracker.
Why fruitcake for cheese? Because all fruitcakes are good for cheese.
Well, this is a much denser, sort of almost richer, sweeter one. So it means that if you have a hard cheese like a Monty's, which is quite earthy, it gives a nice complement and sweet back of the mouth. So it's great for an alternative to chutneys and things.
You seem to know an awful lot of additional information about these cheeses, about how they're separated out into the vodkas and so on. Is that necessary for your job?
I guess it comes out of curiosity, really. I mean, you could just say, oh, this one's fruity tasting, this one's salty. But when you know even more, it makes it so much more engaging. And it's just interesting more than anything, I find.
We try to give an experience down here at the Gogs, where you come here and you find out what you're actually eating. And we try and have a good relationship with cheesemakers so that they feel like they're selling their cheese well, rather than just having bits cut and put on a shelf.
I think it was blessed are the cheesemakers.
Well, obviously, it's not meant to be taken literally. It refers to any manufacturers of dairy products.
None of these are pre-packed. You have to come and see what you get, and we wrap it in front of you so you know exactly what you're getting.
We're all right, though, aren't we? We've got a little tiny bit of knowledge of most things. Remember,
we
used to make sausages, didn't we?
Oh, we used to do all the practical things.
We decided to make sausages first? We saw this advert in the Meat Trades Journal, a course up in the Smithfield College up in London, and I went up to learn how to make sausages. Do you remember?
Yes.
And I came back. God, it was so exciting. So we came back and got our recipes. I think then there was your Uncle George, used to have a butcher's in Shelford.
Yes,
and then we sort of got a mishmash, sort of his recipe, but added our own things in. And that was so exciting. We really enjoyed that. But do you remember we had this little tiny...
Hand filler. Yeah.
God, I wouldn't want to do that now. Can you imagine? Mm. Oh, yeah. It used to be great fun. And it worst of these, it's just different now.
And by different now, Leslie means...
It changed more since the boys came back.
Right.
Charles started to... We had the cart shed, which is now their deli. He did all the work on that, didn't he?
Yeah.
He sort of rebuilt it. He did an awful lot of work himself.
Helming the farm shop, Charles Bradford.
It's all kind of a bit lifestyle, you know. I want people just to come down here and feel really relaxed, really welcome into the place. And, I mean, you can see how people are responding to it. I mean, this is a damp day, and yet the place is packed. You know, it's wonderful.
And his brother, Marcus Bradford.
So we're just trying to make use of all these little barns and areas we have just to try and make a little more of a kind of market atmosphere, I guess. We're planning to have lots of little stalls doing lots of different types of food, much more tasty, much more interactive. So at the moment, we're just trying to catch up, essentially. You know, we're so busy, we're just trying to make sure that we get everything right.
What's really amazing is how Charles and Marcus, how well they get on. There's 9 years between them, and, you know, they're quite different personalities.
I slow him down and he speeds me up, and hopefully together... we go at the right speed.
But it works, doesn't it?
Yes,
it works.
Very much, yeah.
They're not exactly the same, and it really works. Charles drives it, and Marcus holds him back a bit and tries to put another aspect to the whole business.
It's nice to have all these new ideas, but if they're just ideas and don't get finished, it doesn't mean anything.
And it really, really has worked, and we're so thrilled with that, aren't we?
Yeah.
Better than we ever could have hoped.
Yeah.
And I asked your brother, and okay. I asked your mum and dad as well, and they pretty much said the same thing.
Yeah. You know, it's one of the things that we actually do with all the team now, is we do a sort of personality profile with them, and it is exactly that. It's understanding, you know, I understand kind of how I am and how I communicate, and same with the family and with the rest of the team. And yes, you're right. I mean, with Marcus and I do tend to be a bit more driven, going to go get them and running away with it a little bit, but I help pull him along, and he kind of just slows me down a little bit. And you're right, it works really well. But don't get me wrong, it has taken us a long time to work this out. It just hasn't happened.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so much happening. I mean, with all these different bits, I mean, even there, I'm looking out over there to see the shack there at the moment and serving the burgers and the sausage rolls and the soups and scotch eggs. And it's just a real sort of hubbub of stuff happening.
Welcome to the shack. Today's soup is sweet potato and orange. I'm Lucy.
I'm Eleanor.
And I'm Ben.
And today we're running the Gogmagog Farm Shop. I do know where I work, I promise.
And today we are running the shack at the Gogmagog Hills Farm Shop.
Perfect.
Thank you.
The shack is actually pretty cool. It's sort of American, slightly American feel about it. You know, I've had quite a bit of street food in the States from sort of shacks in the deep south, and you'll find fantastic food being served in it. And you get sort of get that feeling here. We've got a good feeling about it.
We do make all the soup that we sell on the premises as well.
What kinds of soup?
Yesterday we had turkey soup, which is very nice, from the turkeys that we sell.
We also sell our scotch egg and sausage rolls in the shack, which are best sellers at the Gogs. And today we have mulled wine.
We come here pretty often because the scotch eggs are legendary, so it's always a treat for the children to come here on the way back from school. Today we're here for these amazing hamburgers.
So we've done all these other things and got people like Steak and Honor in, not because that was the plan, but because people keep coming and we need to service them, really. So that's why we have the shack there. But it's just trying to keep one step ahead and trying to keep up with demand, really. That's why we built the cafe.
Hi. Whereabouts are you sitting?
Just there.
Thank you. How may I help?
What is the cafe now? It used to be that the chickens were in there and people could come in and they could take the eggs from under the chickens. They loved that. People still try, but you couldn't do it now. People who now have their own families can remember when they were little coming here to do that. And it's amazing how you remember that.
Joyce, who's been at the Gogs for 5 years, makes all the cakes and scones for the cafe, and she said the same.
Before working here, I worked in school for 20 years, so a lot of the children have grown up and now come in with children of their own, which is really scary.
So I've worked at Gogmagog for 2 years. I mostly work in the cafe, but I've also been trained in the deli and the shop, so I can kind of work everywhere.
That was Jess. She manages.
We make as many of our own cakes in the cafe now as possible, so all the scones are quite famous. People come here for cream teas, the chocolate cake, the flapjacks are getting popular.
Those weren't scones, those were mountains.
Yeah, they are very large. Quite a lot of people share them, and a lot of people go, oh, it's the size of my head. But everyone seems to enjoy them, so that's good. We get a lot of compliments on them. We also do a lot of the nice savoury foods, and there's two types of scotch egg, the traditional and the herb and mustard flavour. Sometimes we do a black pudding one as well. Bacon sandwiches are always very popular. Soup's very popular. We normally get through about 3 flavours a day of that, especially in the winter. And that's all served with like local bread from Balzano's Bakery in Cambridge. It's a great atmosphere. It really is a family kind of atmosphere. I mean, I went to Leslie's birthday party. You know, Charles's birthday party was once one of our socials. Like, the Christmas party's coming up. We all went bowling this Wednesday, which was great. So it is a really nice place to work at Christmas because we've got the Christmas tree selling and obviously in the turkeys as well.
Of course, the turkeys.
But in the early days, you did always do a few
We've
turkeys,
always done
didn't you?
Turkey.
Oh, that was one of the first jobs I had to do when I was married, is dress a turkey. Oh, God. I remember wearing rubber gloves, and they shredded, of course, so that soon went out the window, because I couldn't be seen to be not helping. I'd never done that before. I was a secretary. I mean, you know, you didn't know that sort of thing.
We worked very closely with another family called Kelly, and we reared the Kelly Bronze turkeys, which are completely drug-free. The turkeys go down to their farm to be processed.
Because they all hand-pluck them all, you see.
Kelly's still hand-plucked, and they come back to us in boxes, just ready to go in the oven. They come complete with instructions how to cook them, and they really are, really, although I say so myself, they really are very, very tasty.
We want the same service and the same quality from 10 years ago when someone came in and it was just Dad and that one customer.
Now, you've had a good look round today and hopefully spoken to some people to give you kind of the range of a lot of the things that are going on here. I've loved overhearing you chatting to some of the members of the team and some of the customers as well. It's so warming to see their enthusiasm and to hear it.
Well, Charles Bradford, it's been great to come back here again. And we're here at the Gogmagog Hills Farm Shop on the
A1307, 2 miles south of Cambridge, opposite the turning to Stapleford.
Thanks, Charles.
Thank you very much. Lovely to see you again.
Yeah, we owe a lot to them. And I think the general ethos that they started with, we're continuing with.
We don't know when their full retirement's going to be yet, do we, Colin?
Do you want to retire?
No, not really.
We'll never fully retire. I think as long as we're needed.
I think so. I hope so.
Yeah.
So, what to drink with all this food that we've been talking about today? Well, here is Tom Lewis, so it's paper and pencil time again.
Fizz is a good wine to have in, isn't it?
It's always a good one to start with, isn't it, I think?
But it's fairly versatile as well.
I think you can do it with most things. You could have it with your Christmas breakfast as an aperitif. You can celebrate New Year's Eve with it. There's lots of things you can do with a fizz. It's never a bad time for it.
Well, I quite like the idea of fizz at breakfast, I must say. So, any good ones to recommend?
I'd recommend the Cremant de Bourgogne P100 Blanc de Noir, Simile Febre. It's a non-vintage and it's from private seller who are based in Newmarket at £15.21. It's from Burgundy, but actually from Chablis. The grapes are grown in the Chablis area.
And the grapes are what?
It's Pinot Noir, which is quite unusual for the Chablis area.
Okay, what's it like? What's it taste like?
Well, it's actually very similar to champagne. It's a champagne in everything but name. It's quite biscuity. It's got red fruits from the Pinot Noir. It's quite toasty and elegant. And the nice thing about private cellar is their buyer is a master of wine. So the wines are all of a really good standard.
Yes. Well, they should be, shouldn't they? Okay, if people find that difficult to get hold of for whatever reason, is there an alternative that's readily available?
If you want an easily available alternative at a slightly cheaper price, the Co-op has a Prosecco, which is on special offer. It's less expensive, but it's still a very good fizz for the festive season.
Oh, that's good. Let's move on and assume people are having turkey.
Well, why not?
What's a good wine for? Well, let's start with white. Is there any?
A white with turkey. Again, I'm going to stick with Burgundy. The Cédric et Patrice Martin Puy Fuisse, 2012. That's from Beaujolais and Beyond, who are based in Norwich.
And which area is that from? Which part of Burgundy?
So it's in Burgundy, but we're right at the other end now. We're in the Mâconnais, which is in the south.
Right. And what's that one like?
So Mâconnais is it's all Chardonnay growing. Because it's the south, it means that you're getting a richer, riper, slightly fuller style of wine. In terms of flavours, there are orchard fruits, a bit of sweet spice and some nice minerality. It's a really well-made wine.
Mm. And for those of us who prefer red?
If you want a red to go with your turkey, I go for a classic Bordeaux. The Chateau Sénéjac, 2009. This is currently on special offer from the Co-op at £13.99.
The Co-op's wine, is it improving?
I think it's improved a lot over the last couple of years. They've revamped the range and they're getting really quite interesting now.
Yeah, and they must have some good tasters.
Good buyers, good tasters, buyers, yeah. And yes, absolutely.
Right. And is that a right or a left bank?
So this is from the Médoc, so it's the left bank, mainly Cabernet Sauvignon.
And it's a Cru Bourgeois?
That's right, Cru Bourgeois. This is a classification for the better wines of the Médoc. The very top wines have the 1855 classification. This is sort of the next one down.
Right, and what's that one like to drink?
As you might expect, it is a typical Médoc. So in terms of flavour profile, you've got some cassis, cigar box and a bit of cool mint. 2009 was one of a pair of back-to-back good years in Bordeaux. So it's a great vintage. I think that shows in the wine and the quality and the structure. But with 5 years' age now, it's drinking very nicely.
Right. Have you any idea whether the Co-op has got ample supplies of this wine?
No idea, so probably best to get down there as quick as you can and see
if
it's available.
Go there now. Right. OK, what about something sweet?
For a sweet wine, I think port is very Christmassy. So a good one is the Taylor's Quinta de Vargilas 2001. That's £30, and that's from Cambridge Wine Merchants.
What style of port?
Well, the various styles. This is a vintage, which is basically the very best that you can get in terms of port. They're designed to last for not just years, but decades, an age in bottle. So even though this is 14 years old, it's still relatively young.
And it's good with things like Christmas pudding?
Perfect with Christmas pudding. It's got all that sort of ripe, sort of figgy eucalyptus. It's going to work brilliantly with a Christmas pudding, I think.
And it's fairly expensive. It's more expensive than any of the other wines that you've mentioned. Is it good value for money?
I think in terms of value for money, this is spot on. It is quite a bit more expensive, but you know, to get a vintage port at this price at 14 years old, that's partly what you're paying for, is just the age and the quality.
And when you said before that it will last for decades, that's unopened.
Unopened, yeah.
Because I think some people think that you can open a bottle of port and leave it indefinitely and it's still going to be all right.
It will certainly, because it's so strong and there's so much going on there, You can certainly drink it over the course of a couple of days, possibly even weeks. But yeah, when we're talking about aging, then that's, yeah, in bottle, sealed.
Right. And time for the Cambridge food and drink news now. Cambridge food bank information, the sort of things that would be welcome at the moment are obviously Christmassy things, because people who haven't got very much money can't buy very much in the way of Christmassy things. So things like Christmas biscuits, Christmas cakes, Christmas puddings, mince pies, that sort of thing are welcome.
Now, Alan, you popped down into the new Hot Numbers on Trumpington Street yesterday.
Yes, it opened yesterday. I was there, although not actually as it opened. And it was good. Very popular, lots of people in there, very university feel, just what you'd expect, good coffee, good cakes, afternoon teas, produce some of the cakes, and there's a sitting out area in the back in the outside, which nobody was sitting in for obvious reasons, but it will be nice in the summer. So, good place. Another good place, the Pint Shop. The bar of the Pint Shop is now open until midnight from Wednesdays till Saturdays for the next few weeks, and when I was there last week, it was doing really good business.
There's a beer festival at the Hot Bine in Ferris Street at the moment. It finishes tomorrow night and features real ales, ciders and craft beers from their favourite breweries.
Our very own Andrew Webb is running a masterclass at The Guardian this coming Monday from 6.30 to 9.30pm. Now, this course covers all angles of food writing, from how to research your subject to amass world-class knowledge to tips for translating your expertise into sparkling prose that hooks readers. Now, the course also covers how to get your work into print, either via self-publishing or by pitching to an established imprint. And there is a guest talk from a specialist publisher to provide a realistic picture of your options. The course is £99 and you can book via the Guardian website.
The Black Bar Brewery will be open on the 20th of December from 9am till 1pm. There'll be a range of mini cask beers and bottle beers on sale. And the brewery is at Unit B3, Button End Industrial Estate in Harston. Joe will also be at the Pemberton Arms in Harston on Tuesday for the Christmas fair. That's on the 16th of December from 3 till 8pm.
And Jack's Gelato will be doing a special Christmas churn, or two probably, for home deliveries or collection, 19th and 23rd. Contact him via his Facebook page for more details. The flavours include Speckluse, Coffee Brandy and Masala, Double Ginger, Seville Orange Sorbet, Eggnog, Stilton, Vanilla Mascarpone, Roasted Beetroot Sorbet and Cinnamon.
And that's about it from Flavour Today. We will be back in 4 weeks' time on the 10th of January, and we'll have a roundup from 2014. And if you'd like to get in touch with us whilst we're off the air with any news or views, you can email us, flavour@cambridge105.fm. And remember too, this programme is repeated tomorrow at 7am and will be podcast from around about next Tuesday.
And if you think you'll forget, follow us on Twitter at Flavour105 and we'll certainly remind you.
So until the 10th of January, thank you very much for listening to Flavour, and we hope you have a happy Christmas and a great new year.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.